And here we go. Okay. Show is being recorded as I speak. Get back to old Outlook here. Let's see, I'm also interested in the stream listeners. Not a whole lot going on there. Ooh. Okay. It's a nice number. Okay, folks, no more farting around here. We're being recorded. This show is Mideast Madness for Monday, April 29th, the penultimate day before May, in the year of our Lord 2013. No, this is not a religious show. And be assured that the conflict over in Israel / Palestine is not essentially a religious conflict. Religion just messes things up when it comes to politics. Unfortunately, that has happened to a high degree, but the conflict there is essentially over land, over who has the right to be where they are, unfettered, living securely and safely in peace. Now, yeah, what I was starting to say was I have to force myself to endeavor every time I do this show, every minute, to remain respectful and civil. This show, it is my aim for this show not to be just another pro this or pro that 2-hour propaganda session, but obviously my sentiment is towards the Palestinians and for the Arabs in general. However, I promote peace and security for all Jews, all Israelis, all Palestinians, all Arabs, everyone, those of any religion, all Muslims, all Christians, etc. That being said, I have some interesting items. Let's see. Yeah, this just came in over the wire a couple of days ago. From the Electronic Intifada. Okay, right away you're saying to yourselves, Electronic Intifada, that's Arab propaganda, so-called Palestinian propaganda. My view on this is that everyone has their propaganda, and instead of trying your gall-durndest to stay away from all forms of this sinful propaganda and keep yourself clean of it, I think it's probably a better idea for everyone to get as much propaganda as they can from both sides of the issue, from any side of the issue, and do the evaluating yourself. Let your brain do the walking and come to your own conclusions. In the meantime, relax. Put your brains into my hands. Yes, I know that is disgusting imagery. This is from the Electronic Intifada, April 22. Originally authored by Ismail Mohammed of United Press International. You know, the old UPI? Yes, they're still in existence. Ismail Mohammed submitted through Electronic Intifada by Ben White, April 22nd. U.S. State Department says Israel practices institutional discrimination. Perhaps the most important thing to remember, this is the United States Department of State speaking here. Israel practices institutional discrimination. Here we go. Israel practices, quote, institutional and societal discrimination, end quote, against its Palestinian citizens. This is the conclusion of the United States State Department in its newly published country reports on human rights practices for 2012. The annual country report on Israel contains uncomfortable reading for pro-Israel advocacy groups, particularly given who is publishing it, which is to say the U.S. State Department, with regards to problems faced by Palestinians with Israeli citizenship. The State Department notes the following. Point. Quote, resources devoted to Arabic education were inferior to those devoted to Hebrew education in the public education system. Point. Quote, approximately 93% of land was in the public domain, including approximately 12.5% owned by the non-governmental organization, the Jewish National Fund, JNF, whose statutes prohibit sale or lease of land to non-Jews. Point, quote, approximately 60,000 Bedouin lived in at least 46 unrecognized tent or shack villages that did not have water and electricity and lacked educational, health, and welfare services. 60,000 Bedouins. And point, quote, the law bars family reunification when a citizen's spouse is a non-Jewish citizen of Iran, Iraq, Syria, or Lebanon. Citizens may apply for temporary visit permits for Palestinian male spouses 35 years old or older, or Palestinian female spouses 25 years old or older, but may not receive residency based on their marriage and have no path to citizenship, end quote. I'll have something in particular to say about that last point after I finish reading this. It goes on, in addition, the report also records human rights abuses perpetrated by the Israeli authorities against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and Gaza Strip, such as, and I quote, excessive use of force against civilians, including killings, abuse of Palestinian detainees, particularly during arrest and interrogation, austere and overcrowded detention facilities, improper use of security detention procedures, demolition and confiscation of Palestinian property, limitations on freedom of expression, assembly, and association, and severe restrictions on Palestinians' internal and external freedom of movement, end quote. The State Department's observations on Israel's institutionalized racism and systematic violations of Palestinian rights are far from comprehensive or flawless. But it is a marked contrast to the kind of tokenism popular with Israel's propagandists, like the Jewish agency's Avi Meir's tweeting of the appointment of a Palestinian citizen to the position of director of the emergency department at Hadassah University Medical Center, a story he shared 9 times over 1 hour. It's the Hasbara version of that familiar refrain, I'm not racist, some of my best friends are black. End of dispatch. I neglected to look up the word Hasbara. I came across that not too long ago, but I'll find out what I can about definition of the word Hasbara. In the meantime, my review and comments on this item. Yes, indeed, it is highly unusual for any department of the United States government, any entity of the U.S. government, to say anything bad about Israel. That's been my experience anyway, my personal experience over many, many years of looking at this stuff. The United States generally is seen to be virtually in lockstep with the way that Israel goes. So goes the U.S. government and, to a significant degree, the U.S. population. That's, in my opinion, that's certainly true of the American Jewish population in lockstep with Israel, being convinced that they need to be in order to prevent a second Holocaust, blah, 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 and promote the survival of the state of Israel. But as we've all been learning lately, for those who've been paying close attention, Israel does far more to jeopardize its own security by the treatment of its indigenous Arab population, also called Palestinians, both in the militarily occupied territories as well as within the state of Israel per se. Like it says here, the annual country report on Israel contains uncomfortable reading for pro-Israel advocacy groups, particularly given that it comes from the U.S. State Department. I'm sure this report is not particularly welcomed by supporters of Israel, and they probably will try to sweep this under the rug. So I consider it my duty to get it out in the open. Resources devoted to Arab education, inferior to those devoted to Hebrew education, Hebrew, of course, being the spoken language of the Jewish people of Israel, the resurrected Hebrew language, by the way, in the public education system. In other words, we're not talking about private entities who are trying to educate their Palestinian Arab children or Jewish children. This is part of the public education system not being dished out equitably. This business about some 93% of land was in the public domain, including 12.5% owned by the Jewish National Fund, whose statutes prohibit sale or lease of land to non-Jews. You see, there is a very complex myriad of authorities within Israel, both governmental and non-governmental, hence NGO, non-governmental organization, Jewish National Fund, JNF. Even though the Declaration of Israeli Independence and other documents, possibly, that their government has, may declare that everyone will be treated equally, be they Jew or non-Jew, there are other restrictions, loopholes, and exemptions that poke their ugly head out, and this is an example of one. Jewish National Fund is not part of the Israeli government, but they have the authority and have had since before 1948, since before the birth of Israel, they have had a lot of authority in effectively bringing Jews from around the world into Palestine, into Israel, and displacing Palestinian Arabs in the process. And a small part of that process is the 12.5% of land in the so-called public domain owned by the National Jewish Fund. Land in the public domain, but it's owned by the JNF, and their statutes, their laws, prohibit sale or lease of land to non-Jews. The 60,000 Bedouin who lived in 46 unrecognized tent or shack villages do not have updated and sanitary infrastructure, water, electricity, and they lack educational health and welfare services. I can see people running out saying, hey, they choose to live like that. But they're still considered Israeli citizens. Perhaps they are living in a somewhat isolated fashion, but their needs are not being met by a government which has promised to take care of those needs. Now, this business about the law barring family reunification when a citizen spouse is a non-Jewish citizen of Iran, Iraq, Syria, or Lebanon. I don't know why they cite those countries in particular, but I do have a good friend who I met in the Eastern Mediterranean on the island of Cyprus, and eventually she and I and 42 other activists sailed into the port of Gaza City in the Gaza Strip, which is Palestinian land. Hawaida Araf, a co-founder of the International Solidarity Movement, the ISM. And she's still very active with ISM. She is an attorney. She is also the wife of a Jewish man who is highly sympathetic with the Palestinian cause, has been critical of the Israeli government's policies and abuses of Arabs. His name is Adam Shapiro. He was deported not long ago. I think it was deportation. It may possibly have just been a case of him being out of the country and they didn't let him back in. And they, you know, when someone is an activist and they their efforts are out in the open, the government can bring these laws, unduly bring these restrictive laws against people they don't like. And that's the case with Adam. He's not allowed to return to Israel for the time being anyway. And his dear wife, Hawaida, is pregnant with their first child. Perhaps he's had the child. I never did ascertain when the birth was due to take place. But here is one example of Israeli law barring family unification when at least one of the spouses is non-Jewish of Israel, having nothing to do with Iran, Iraq, Syria, or Lebanon. These two Israeli citizens, at least one of whom, Hawaida, the Arab, probably a Christian Arab, is native, and her family goes back and some untold number of generations in Palestine. Indigenous, native Palestinian. Very bad situation for them. Spouses, I think this last part of the abridged report really has to do with Israel's abuse of the native Palestinians. Vital part of this report, excessive use of force against civilians, including killings. I'm just going to reread this whole paragraph. Abuse of Palestinian detainees, particularly during arrest and interrogation. I'll insert here the fact that there are still several hundred children, those under the age of 18, Palestinians who have been detained, many or most of whom without due process, by the Israelis. Austere and overcrowded detention facilities. Improper use of security detention procedures. In fact, I believe most of the adults are interned without due process and without legal representation. Limitations on freedom of expression, assembly, and association. Okay. It's the same refrain always coming up by the defenders of Israel and the Israelis themselves. We have to, this is all for the security's sake. We're in a kind of war against the Arabs, a kind of perpetual war, more or less, the Israelis will tell you, and we have to prohibit activities that incite incite violence or might incite violence, they certainly incite people to think, both Palestinian and Israeli Jew. As it says here, limitations on freedom of expression, assembly, and association. So much for the Israeli so-called democracy. And severe restrictions on Palestinians' internal and external freedom of movement. Now that has largely to do with the Jewish-only settlements supported in full and actively by the Israeli government. Jewish settlements in the Palestinian territories that are militarily occupied by Israel. You put a settlement of hardline Jews, and the settlers are by and large the most militant zealot of the Zionists. Zionism being one huge resettlement movement of Jews to one place, regardless of the welfare of the people who were there first. You have a settlement that's established and expanded outside of Israel and pushes the Palestinians off of their land. And then you erect the so-called security wall. So-called, as in security, is the word in quotations there. Another example of how they're just messing things up for themselves. You separate not only Israel from the territories, but those illegal Zionist settlements within Palestine, and the wall separates those illegally according to world agreement, international agreement, separates the settlements from the Palestinians, and in the process cuts off some of the Palestinian population areas, villages and small towns, from the rest of contiguous Palestine. Cuts through their land, separates homes from farm homes from their fields. And the walls and the Jewish-only highways that go between the settlements and Israel and between the settlements also cuts off and severely hinders movement of Palestinians. So their Palestinian society is severely hampered by whatever is best for the Israelis, it seems. I know that some of you who are listening to the show, fortunate enough to be able to receive the show, are well aware that Israel is doing a very bad thing by this expansionism and fulfillment of an over 100-year-old Zionist dream, which I think is obsolete and unnecessary. Supposedly for their own security, they make life very unsecure, unpleasant, and unsafe for the indigenous Palestinians. And as for the word Hasbara, it's the Hasbara version of that familiar refrain, "I'm not racist, some of my best friends are black." Well, if I can only get to here's a search box. I couldn't find a search box, which is why it's taken me so long to do that. Okay. Yeah, I'm looking for the definition of Hasbara, Hasbara. And I've got a list here. The most popular item at the very top of the list is entitled Public Diplomacy in Israel. So the Wikipedia link. Let's see what they have to say. There is also a www.hasmara.com. Thank you for, okay, public diplomacy. That's the definition. Public diplomacy in Israel. Public diplomacy in Israel, also Hasbara. From the Hebrew Hasbara, explaining, meaning to explain. It refers to the public relations efforts to disseminate information about Israel. The term is used by the Israeli government and its supporters to describe efforts to explain government policies and promote Israel in the face of negative press and to counter what they see as delegitimization of Israel around the world. Hasbara means explanation and is also a euphemism for propaganda. Being from Wikipedia, I find that to be a bit on the biased side, but I frankly don't have a big problem with that. I'll take it as they say. Hasbara means explanation and is also a euphemism for propaganda. Anyway, as I was saying about 37 minutes ago, not all propaganda, whether it's true or not, whether it's good or bad, at least initially is worth listening to, worth looking at and considering. So to say Hasbara is a euphemism for propaganda should be a neutral definition. Okay, I don't want to get all tied up in intellectualism here, but there we go with Hasbara. Search over. And I don't want this anymore. I can get back to my... search companion. I need to go back to my Hotmail. Oh, it's on Bing. That's why I'm getting an interruption here. That's why I have nothing to do with Bing at home on my personal computer. It is, the time is 3:38. That's 15:38 hours Pacific Daylight Time here in Santa Cruz County, California. This is the Mideast Madness Show, which comes to you every Monday at 3 p.m., 3 o'clock p.m. on Free Radio Santa Cruz. 101.3 FM, for those who can pick up the signal. It's a pretty small signal, so you would do best to try and pick us up if you're not already listening to us on the World Wide Web at www.freakradio.org. Okay. This is not supposed to be happening here. Whoops. This is really strange. I'm sorry, folks. Sorry for the confusion. Okay, we'll do it that way. Okay, so much for this. This business on the State Department's report. Now, I'll read you something else. As many of you know, Israel receives more United States government assistance than any other nation in the form of foreign aid, in particular military assistance. Israel is the number one recipient under that particular budget. Comes out to a little over $3 billion a year, and they're good for at least another 8 or 9 years under the current agreement of getting more than $3 billion a year. And I don't mind reminding people that that is more money than the entire continent of Africa, the world's second largest continent, receives from U.S. foreign aid. That being said, And even while Israel is practicing these terrible undemocratic practices against its native Palestinians, while that's going on in Israel, here's an item that came down the pike last Friday, April 26th. This is from NACLA, the North American Congress on Latin America. Over 45 years of analysis, education, and advocacy in the Americas. This is entitled Israel's Proxy War in Guatemala. Very old news, to be sure. But worth repeating, some of the details of which are worth repeating, and there's a bit of something current going on here that I shall reveal to you forthwith. Israel's Proxy War in Guatemala, a Central American country, by Gabriel Chivon. You may not know it from reading or listening to the major U.S. media, but the rest of the world has been steeped in news coverage of a former Guatemalan head of state recently on trial in a national court through proceedings, though proceedings are currently on hold, for genocide and crimes against humanity. The accused, General Efrain Rios Montt, was one of the most vicious mass killers the United States or Israel ever produced. Known as Brother Efrain, a fundamentalist convert of the California-based Church of the Word, Verbo, Rios Montt thanked his God in heaven for anointing him as Guatemala's president. But on earth, he thanked Israel for establishing his March 1982 military coup. Israel Press reported that 300 Israeli advisors helped execute the coup, which succeeded so smoothly, Brother Efrain told an ABC News reporter, because many of our soldiers were trained by Israelis. Let me read that sentence again, for my edification, if not anyone else's. Israeli press reported that 300 Israeli advisors helped execute the 1982 coup, which succeeded so smoothly, Brother Efrain told an ABC News reporter, because many of our soldiers were trained by Israelis, end quote. Though, through the height of La violencia, the violence, or desencarnación, meaning loss of flesh, loss of being, between the late 1970s to early 1980s, Israel assisted every facet of attack on the Guatemalan people. Largely taking over for the United States on the ground in Guatemala, with Washington retaining its role as paymaster while also maintaining a crucial presence in the country, Israel had become the successive government's main provider of counterinsurgency training, light and heavy arsenals of weaponry, aircraft, state-of-the-art intelligence technology and infrastructure, and other vital assistance. At the time, Rios Montt defended his war against the, quote, guerrilla, indistinguishable from civilian non-combatants, in this way, quote, look, the problem of the war is not just a question of who is shooting. For each one who is shooting, there are 10 working behind him, end quote. Rios Montt's press secretary added, the guerrillas won over many Indian collaborators. Therefore, the Indians were subversives, right? And how do you fight subversion? Clearly, you had to kill Indians because they were collaborating with subversion. And then they say, You're massacring innocent people. But they weren't innocent, this press secretary said. They had sold out to subversion. And that is taken from Witness to Genocide, Survival International, 1983, page 12. Or, as one of Brother Ephraim's Verbo pastors explained to a delegation of Pentecostals from California about the regime's awesome benevolence. I quote here, "The army doesn't massacre Indians," the Verbo pastor assured the visitors. "It massacres demons. And Indians are demons possessed. They are communists." End of quotation. A February 1983 CBS Evening News with Dan Rather program reported, Israel, quote, "didn't send down congressmen, human rights activists, or priests," end quote, to strengthen Israel's special relationship with Guatemala. Israel, quote, "taught the Guatemalans how to build an airbase. They set up their intelligence network, tried and tested on the Israeli-occupied Palestinian West Bank and Gaza, designed simply to beat the guerrilla," end quote. Time magazine from March 28, 83, chimed in that Guatemalan army, quote, "outposts in the jungle have become near replicas of Israeli army field camps," end quote. At one of these Israeli outposts replicated in Huehuetenango, among the areas hardest hit by the genocide, with the second highest number of massacres registered by a United Nations Truth Commission, Time magazine continues, Colonel Gustavo Menendez Herrera pointed out that his troops are using Israeli communications equipment, mortars, submachine guns, battle gear, and helmets, end quote. Naturally, as Army Chief of Staff Benedicto Lucas Garcia had stated previously, the Israeli soldier is a model and an example to us. Today's Guatemalan power elite, firmly rooted in the same lineage of death squads that ravaged the country for decades, continues to gaze on his legacy with adoration. I have another quotation here. "If there is thriving agriculture, it's an Israeli contribution," hailed Guatemala's congressional speaker in 2009, when his government body bestowed its highest honor to Israel, adding further praise for Israel having shared its, quote, "rich experience in security, education, and medicine over the years." Huh. Okay. Investigative journalist Alan Nairn interviewed current Guatemalan president, Otto Perez Molina, when Molina was Rios Montt's commander carrying out the genocide in the Navajo area. At one point in the film 1982 interview, Molina shows investigative journalist Nairn one of his army's artillery mortars, answering that the brand of weapon and its ammunition were provided by Israel. Apart from lasting accolades by Guatemala's leaders, Israel's participation in the repression is remembered somewhat differently by its victims and by the children of its victims. An intergenerational memory is invoked in ongoing coalition work by students in the United States. Activists include undocumented students and young citizens alike of Palestinian and Maya Huehuetenango descent. Activities by organized groups cross-pollinate throughout racial, social, cross-pollinate throughout related social struggles. They resonate from the curves of history and offer us ways to move full circle to justice. Again, I am reading from an item from the NACLA website. NACLA is North American Congress on Latin America, from April 24th. It's entitled Israel's Proxy War in Guatemala. written by Gabriel Chavon. And again, this is not just history. He began his Mr. Chavone began his article by pointing out that although you probably won't see this in the major U.S. media, but the rest of the world has been steeped in news coverage of the trial in a Guatemalan national court of General Efrain Rios Montt, who became the head of state and is accused of genocide and crimes against humanity, continuing with Israel's proxy war in Guatemala. One such bend in history can be found in a refugee-led movement that focused on the right of return among tens of thousands of displaced Guatemalans who, for a generation, had been living in refugee camps throughout southern Mexico. Well, where have we heard this kind of thing before? Refugee camps throughout southern Mexico of indigenous Guatemalans. Voices of the Guatemalan movement defended a range of issues, from demilitarization of the country to gender equality within the camps. Maria Garcia Hernandez, co-founder of a refugee women's organization called Mama Majin, described the standpoint of her group. The Guatemalan refugee and returnee women are clearer about the fact that land is the most important family possession that we have. Land is a space where we can live and work, defend our rights, and pass on our culture, customs, and languages to our daughters and sons, end quote. Such sentiment and connection to the land resounds with those of the Palestinian struggle for liberation and return, says author Gabriel Chavone. Garcia Hernandez, Maria Garcia Hernandez, whose community called for, quote, all women of the world to fight together for a world with equality and justice, added reflections of resilience in confronting the present and the future. We face, with our families, the challenges of coping with the losses of war and exile. All women and men can help search for ways great and small to lead us to a resolution of our most urgent needs and the wish of all humanity to have a world of justice and peace. End quote. Let me point out that Gabriel M. Chavon is an ad hoc steering committee member of National Students for Justice in Palestine. He is the author of the forthcoming title, In Dreams, Dreams in all capital letters. I'm not sure. I don't know why he does that. Forthcoming title, In Dreams and Genocide Denial, U.S. Immigration and the Destruction of Guatemalan Life. And by the way, the North American Congress on Latin America, NACLA, its apparent headquarters are, or at least this dispatch, is in care of NYU CLACS, CLACS, 53 Washington Square South, floor 4W, New York, New York, 10012. They're in New York. Yes, I have been aware of Israel's intrusion and inclusion of itself and its hardware and some of its philosophy, its military philosophy in Central America in the past. I suppose a good Israeli would say, well, we need to make a living somehow. Only, in this case, they did so by supporting, largely through and with the help of the United States, the U.S. proxy government, probably corporate-oriented. Rich man's government in Guatemala in the late 70s and the early 80s. If anyone wants to talk to me about this, take issue, etc., call me, area code 831-427-3772. Line 2 is 469-3119. This is the Mideast Madness Show. I am Ren Tawil. We come to you every Monday at 3 p.m. on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM, streaming live, or in the case of a rerun, whenever, on freakradio.org. Send a message to me via MideastMadness@gmx.com. gmx.com. Please consider donating to Free Radio. This is a pivotal and rather scary time for Free Radio in Santa Cruz. We have less than 2 months to change the location of our radio transmission tower, as the land that it sits upon currently is under foreclosure, and we have a deadline to make for moving it. We need a new spot. High on a hill somewhere, in or around Santa Cruz, preferably, that some generous soul might be willing to lend us or work out some kind of deal with us. Also, we need a new studio. Once again, money being the primary issue, we need something cheaper. A new studio from which to do live shows and where we can line up our internet broadcast, our intra-internet broadcasts. Please consider donating to Free Radio Santa Cruz, right on the envelope, FRSC, Post Office Box 7811, Santa Cruz, that's S-A-N-T-A, second word, C-R-U-Z, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. It is now 2 minutes before 4 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Let me look for some new music. Sorry, no Stuart Davis today. I left those CDs at home. Or maybe they're in my car. How about a little Danny Thomas, folks? You heard me right. Lebanese-American Danny Thomas has sung. I have a recorded piece here. Let me just make sure I have the right recorded piece. Yeah, Arabic folk songs. Although Danny Thomas performed widely for the Arab American community, this record, made in 1952, is his only recording of Arabic music, of Arab music. The proceeds from the record, as well as from the numerous haflas, or parties, Arabic parties, presented by Thomas, benefited St. Jude Hospital Foundation, which has become one of the most important institutions in the world for the research and treatment of children's diseases. Known by, quote, mainstream America only as a comedian and actor, Thomas continued to sing Arabic songs in cameo and guest performances until just a few months before his death in 1991. Danny Thomas singing, and by the way, it is now 1600 hours, 4 p.m. in California.
Oh, ولا تغيري عن رب عمدناك إسابي انت وانا يفنى الهوى منا بعيدنا غرامك مهجتي وعطفك سبيلي وعلى ربعك أنا جعل سبيلي لأجلك هجرت أهلي والصحاب يا عين يا عين يا عين يا عين يا عين تاني
Arabic folk song sung by Mr. Danny Thomas from a recording in 1952. That, by the way, is a recording, re-recording, along with many others on the compact disc, The Music of Arab Americans, a retrospective collection. 1997, Rounder Records Corporation, Cambridge, Massachusetts. This is the Mideast Madness Show. I'm Ren. Through modern computer magic, I've just discovered there are quite a few of you out there, relatively speaking, who are listening to the show now. If you're near your phone or have your phone with you, please give me a call at 831-427-3772. Here's another phone line here in case it gets too busy. 831-469-3119. Hearty har har har. Robert down in San Diego. Haven't heard from you in quite a while. Don't be afraid to enlighten my doorstep again with your call. Becky Johnson. Oh, I'm sorry. I suppose I should just say Becky. If you feel like calling me, go right ahead. I shall continue to be as respectful and civil as I know how to be. Let's make the show into more of a dialogue. Until then, I'm just going to have to keep reading stuff. Here's a repeat from last week. Since it is a current issue, I shall reissue this item from the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee. Over three decades of advocacy and achievement. ADC, should we legalize Israel's discrimination? Interruption here. I have a call. Hello, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Is that you, Ren?
This is me.
Oh, good. Well, this is Robert. I didn't want you to think that I wasn't listening.
Well, I'm glad I sent the word out, and it's really encouraging to know that you are still listening.
Yeah, I am.
What's up?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I don't know if it'd be relevant, but, you know, earlier today I was listening to another online broadcast, and it was the Rents radio program. You ever heard them?
What's it called?
Rents. A guy named Jeff Rents.
No, I haven't.
Well, he's a big name in the right-wing paranoid conspiracy world, I think.
How do you spell that name?
R-E-N-S-E.
S-E?
Yeah.
Rents.
Yeah.
I'm still not familiar. What did he have to say, or she, or whoever?
Well, actually, it wasn't him so much as his guest. He had a guest on. His name was, what was his name? Harold Covington.
Mm-hmm.
And Harold Covington is, Harold Covington is one of those southern-talking right-wing crackers, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He got one of those deep cowboy voices. He's actually about 10 years younger than me, I think. This guy is trying to establish, or else he already has kind of like sort of established, an Aryan Nations white supremacist community somewhere in the Northwest.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a long history going back, and he's written a lot of books. I looked him up on Wikipedia, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What a clown. What a bloody clown. I was sweating. I was sitting here sweating, wishing that they would open up the vines and let me get a crack at this.
And did you?
No, they never opened up the phone lines. I guess they knew better.
Never even opened up the lines, huh? Well, given the your description of this Harold Covington guy, and given the fact that they never even opened up the lines, I think that says a lot about this Rents character.
Yeah, that and the fact that he follows the usual commercial talk radio format, which is protect the station license, protect the sponsor, protect the host, and protect the guest. That's the formula.
And that's internet radio, huh?
Yeah, I don't know if he's broadcast anywhere on the airwaves. It's probably just on the internet now.
I think this Rents character would be hard pressed to find a station that would send him over the airwaves. Maybe not up in Idaho or Montana or that general area where he sounds like he's from. Or does
I don't know where he's from. Actually, he has a history in broadcast. He used to be, I think, employed in a fairly good position with one of the majors, like mm-hmm. in the news department. Well, I do listen to him though, because he does get people on that are like, like this guy. They're pretty funny, but you know, I mean, there's like the UFO stuff and ancient astronauts, and you know, it's kind of like visiting a mental health ward. You know, you get engaged in conversation with somebody for about 15 minutes, and you'll think, well, my God, this guy doesn't belong here. You know. And then all of a sudden he'll start talking about something else.
Does this Rents individual sound like he was supportive of his guest? Or was it more of a tongue-in-cheek kind of interview?
Okay, wait a minute. Now, this was the Rents radio network, or whatever they call it, okay? Uh-huh. But the host was a guy named Mike Harris.
Mike Harris.
Yeah, now he's got a certain amount of claim to legitimacy because he used to be an elected official in some state, you know, something like the legislature or something like that, you know. I mean, he's got some bona fides, you know. But why he has people like that on, I'll be damned if I know. God. Let me tell you what I was gonna try and hit this Harold Covington sucker with.
Okay.
Because I made a few notes, you know, and here they sit. With no use. Oh, Lord.
Please go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, first of all, you know, he was lambasting the liberals, okay?
They get a lot of that, yeah.
I know, but it drives me crazy because he constantly equates liberalism with things like the push for immigration reform, which actually amounts to opening the borders, you know, having an amnesty every 10 years, that kind of thing. He equates liberalism with feminism. He equates liberalism with God knows what, hippies, you know, you name it, man. But or tax and spend Democrats. That's his idea of liberals, right?
Yes.
But at the same time,
they're all in the same bucket, and then you can demonize all of them at once.
Yeah. But see, his trip is that he's like one of these right wing gun nuts, you know, that wants to bring back the Constitution. And I just wanted to ask him if he thought that our Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution wasn't kind of fundamentally liberal, you know?
Mm-hmm. Groundbreaking in its day. Very groundbreaking in its day. In the late...
Oh, it would be. It still is.
Late 18th century. Yeah, you know, like... what's the name of the guy, the great American socialist, Norman somebody, who advocated...
There's a pod horse or something.
Advocated strongly for a national social security program. He was called a communist and berated and ignored by some, ignored by many. And lo and behold, he was credited with being... the main force behind adoption of U.S. Social Security program under FDR, Franklin Roosevelt's presidency.
And, yeah, there it is. You know, one of those, another damned liberal entitlement program.
And yes, once again, it's under attack by those who are trying to blame Social Security for the nation's monetary ills. They're trying to blame Social Security for draining the economy.
Oh, I know, it's laughable.
Not much compared to what the banks are doing or not doing for the working sector and the growth sector, because they're too afraid to move. The banks are hoarding all the money anyway.
Oh, I heard something interesting today.
Yeah.
I don't know if I mentioned to you before, but I'd been in Hawaii. I went over there looking at property.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about moving there because I thought that the jet stream with the radiation from Fukushima was going to miss Hawaii because it goes up north a bit and then comes down and hits the west coast, you know?
Yeah.
As it turns out, I was wrong because the surface winds brought a hell of a lot of contamination there, so I really made a mistake. But anyway, I was there, and I made an offer on a house.
Uh-huh.
And I made a really good offer, okay?
Yeah.
We're talking about it's about a $400,000 house. I was going to give them about $150,000 down. Plus, I was going to let the real estate agent's friend here, where I live, get the commission for selling the house that I have here when I move to Hawaii, right?
Uh-huh.
Plus, I've got a good income that would support that purchase, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean that plus a credit score in the high 800s, you know? I mean, I couldn't have given them much more, right? And the banks were stalling and messing with me on approving the loan.
Hmm.
Yeah, and I finally just said, you know, they don't want a loan. You know, and I just told them, cancel it. Give me back my money.
You weren't talking about a business startup. You were just talking about property, right?
That's right. Now, what I heard today was, this is all unverified, of course. This is just somebody's opinion. I heard that the banks are holding their foreclosed properties that they've picked up, you know, from mortgages they foreclosed on.
Yes.
They're holding them in such a way that it looks like an asset that's earning. And in that way, they're kind of defrauding the, not stockholders, but the other depositors, I suppose, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Plus the Securities and Exchange Commissioner, whoever oversees the banks, right? And what they're doing is they're refusing to sell them, you know, by just, you know, stalling and refusing mortgages and things. And they're bundling them. They're actually bundling these foreclosed homes so that, you know, they've got like 10 or 100 of them. And they'll only sell them that way, which means that they only get sold to people or institutions with a lot of money, you know? Big money.
I wonder if they're doing that deliberately to make it harder for an entity or a corporate entity to buy a bundle, or what?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. They're keeping the homes out of the hands of the citizens, and they're transferring the property to the institutions who can then, you know, make money by renting them, you know?
I see. Well, that is fascinating, Robert. Do you have anything else on the Israel-Arab conflict today?
Well, yes, sort of, but there wasn't anything on my mind specifically about it, but when I was talking to this Harold Covington, you know, one of his bitches included Mexicans, blacks, and Jews.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like, I don't know if I can even explain it.
Well, did he specifically? What's the problem with any or all of those that he has?
Well, he's blaming the immigration problem on the Mexicans rather than on the right wingers corporations in the United States that are bringing them in for cheap labor and, you know,
by NAFTA, yeah,
right. You know, and it's not the Mexican peon's fault, you know. We don't have to declare war on these, you know, poor guys that are trying to trek across the desert down south and get into the country. It's not their fault, you know. The problem is at home, you know. But at the same time, he blames the liberals in Congress for causing the problem, okay? And there we go again, you know. I mean, what do you mean by liberal? You know? I mean, if they're actually liberals, you know, they would probably tend to be protective of our country, you know? So I don't think they're liberals. They might be libertine, or they might be kind of like, what's the word? You know, I mean, they might support a bunch of causes that look liberal, you know, but liberalism doesn't have anything to do with that. You know, it's liberalism is not flakiness or anti-American, you know. It's just, they just can't get it through their head that there's a definitional situation with talking about liberalism. You know, it has to do with fundamental values and political philosophy. And just because you see somebody that's doing something silly that you don't like or destructive that you don't like, that doesn't mean that they're a liberal. You know?
Yes. Well, Robert,
I know I'm off topic.
An excellent example of a hardcore dyed-in-the-wool conservative for the sake of being conservative, Republican for the sake of being Republican is, of course, one of my favorite examples, Rush Limbaugh. Other than him and his ilk, I think the rest of us are still somewhat of a mixed bag. When I hear the word liberal, to be perfectly honest, one of the first images that pops into my head, me being a child of the 60s, is a hippie. It's an image that automatically comes up, a liberal. Maybe it's because I have a certain, satirical bent towards that image whenever I hear the word liberal. But I don't want to be identified as a liberal per se. I being pro-Arab, people can have terrible labels for me, but liberal is definitely one of them, as some conservatives just lump being pro-Palestinian in with the anti-Semites and in with the liberal hippies anyway. But that doesn't necessarily mean I have a lot of other liberal opinions on policies and politics. And in order to survive as a legislator in Washington, one has to be a bit of a mixed bag. That's the nature of politics. You know?
Yes.
I think that's the case. Robert, I got barely a half hour left of the show. I really do appreciate your calling back in. But I want to continue with my the stuff that I have prepared, okay?
Okay, man.
Thanks again for calling, and don't be afraid to check in with me once in a while. Keep listening.
Okay, Ren.
Thank you. That's Robert from San Diego. I believe that's the fourth conversation I have had with him since I began doing this show last June. Yes, folks, coming up on my first anniversary of Mideast Madness. You're hearing all kinds of creaking noises because I gotta constantly have to reset this microphone and the boom that it's attached to. Okay, back to the ADC, American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee. An emergency dispatch to those on their email list. Should we legalize Israel's discrimination against Arab Americans? The American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, most infamously known as AIPAC, is pushing for a provision in the U.S.-Israel Strategic Partnership Act of 2013, which would allow Israeli citizens to enter the United States without a visa, but, believe it or not, would allow Israel, the country of Israel, to continue its discrimination against U.S. citizens of Arab descent. The State Department notes in its official travel advisory, and I quote, U.S. citizens, ... of Arab or Muslim origin have experienced significant difficulties in entering or exiting Israel or the West Bank, end quote. Once again, that's from our own State Department, in all honesty. The dispatch continues, there are 37 countries, who participate in the Visa Waiver Program, a program that allows citizens of those countries to enter the United States without a visa. In return, U.S. citizens can enter those countries without visas. These 37 countries are expected to grant all U.S. citizens, without exceptions, the right to enter their territories without a visa. So this emergency dispatch from ADC is talking about a loophole that Israel is seeking in an American law pertaining to international agreements. Israel wants an exception so they can continue to contribute to their own delegitimization, in my opinion, by continuing to harass Muslims and those of Arab descent who come from the U.S. into Israel and probably any other country into Israel. I mean, the U.S. supposedly has the special relationship with Israel, which is touted by our leaders and by Jews in America. Special relationship. Very nebulous label, which, just by the sound of it, special relationship demands further definition. I mean, these are our leaders, our lawmakers, who occasionally use that like it's some kind of a magic wand. Anyway, back to the dispatch. Take action. Contact your senators now. Ask them to drop the provision that would legalize Israel's discrimination against Arab Americans. Israel's ethnic and religious profiling of U.S. citizens should not be accommodated by our laws. In the last few years, ADC has received hundreds of complaints from Arab American citizens who have been denied entry through Israeli borders. If you or someone you know were denied entry, contact our legal department. That's American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee's legal department. There are, of course, a couple of instant links on what I am in what I'm reading from. Let's see if I can get an address, more specific address for you on the ADC's legal department. Come on, baby. Come on, come on. Well, while we're waiting for that to come up. Yeah, I guess this is what's meant by the special relationship between America and Israel. It is 4:33 in the afternoon on the west coast of North America. This is Mideast Madness coming to you live this April 29th. As we do every Monday starting at 3 p.m. As it is now 4:33 p.m. Okay, it looks like we're not going to get a link there, so I'll just go back to the general folder. And this, of course, is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM, streaming on freakradio.org. That was a news item of sorts. And here's another news item from Jewish Voice for Peace. Again, this is from Jewish Voice for Peace. April 24th, which would have been last Wednesday. Last night, the president of the Associated Students of the University of California announced that he would not veto a UC Berkeley student Senate resolution in favor of divestment from companies that profit from the Israeli occupation. Yay! That, in my eyes, is good news. Goes on, this is an incredible divestment win, and you helped make it happen. In 2010, a similar vote was vetoed by a previous ASUC president. Make no mistake, this is a precedent-setting win on a high-profile campus in the midst of a series of UC student body resolutions in favor of divestment. The growing momentum behind this movement could not be more obvious. The ASUC president was under enormous pressure to veto the resolution, including a nationwide email campaign organized by the Jewish Federations of North America. That is an organization, Jewish Federations of North America, and the Jewish Council for Public Affairs, referring to the divestment bill as, quote, alienating and hateful. These are strong and misleading words to describe a resolution that focuses on the relationship between investments and human rights. Thanks to you, we managed to post an online banner in the Daily California, reminding the ASUC presidents that we are Jews and we support divestment. A larger ad in the printed version of the paper carried the same message, and I have the images before my eyes. I can barely read. At the very top it says, this is a PAID. This is a paid political advertisement. A black and white picture labeled Alabama, 1955. It appears to be Ms. Rosa Parks sitting on a seat in a bus with a white man sitting behind her. We all know what that meant. And the caption reads, in the segregated U.S. South, being black meant riding in the back of the bus, not voting for those who ruled the South, going to separate schools, and being targeted for lynchings and bombings. African Americans launched a boycott and civil disobedience campaign and asked whites to support them. Thousands of American Jews in 1955 said yes. It goes on, the caption does, if the University of California was funding segregated buses today, would you support divestment? And then next to that picture and description is a color picture in another bus labeled Israel 2013. The first picture was Alabama 1955. This is Israel in 2013. A couple of people, a man and a woman, side by side, holding up signs. I can only read the one that the gentleman is holding up. It says, we shall overcome. This is on a bus in Israel. Label goes, caption goes on, in the occupied West Bank, being Palestinian means riding on separate buses, not voting for those who control the West Bank, being targeted for land theft, home demolitions, assault, and imprisonment without charges. It goes on. Palestinians launched a divestment and civil disobedience campaign and asked the whole world to support them. Thousands of American Jews say yes. Thousands of American Jews said yes in 55. Thousands of American Jews say yes in 2013. Your university funds companies that profit from Israel's occupation and oppression of the Palestinian people. Jews support divestment, it says here. Stand for equality. Divest now. Special thanks to the Berkeley chapter of Students for Justice in Palestine, whose leadership, moral clarity, and timeless organizing is truly the foundation of this victory. I am more hopeful and determined than ever to keep this momentum going. Thanks for making a difference when it really counted. Signed, Sidney Levy, Jewish Voice for Peace. Postscript. Yesterday, hours before this announcement in California, over 100 professors at Columbia and Barnard added their signatures to a petition at their university calling on pension fund giant TIAA-CREF to divest from corporations profiting from Israel's occupation. Left out the word occupation. Congratulations to the student, faculty, and staff organizers. This is indeed a long-awaited victory for those in the BDS movement, BDS standing for Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions of Israel's Occupation. All I can say in addition is please keep in mind this is not an out-and-out economic attack on the state of Israel or its own economy per se. BDS directs its efforts, its divestment and boycott efforts, etc., to economic interests tied to the United States or United States corporations, United States educational facilities, institutions, which support Israel's illegal and inhumane occupation of the native Palestinians. That's what that is all about. About 15 minutes left in our program today. Please don't forget, you may, well, first of all, we do, as I've said several times already, Mideast Madness comes to you every Monday at 3 p.m., 1500 hours Pacific Daylight Time, 3 o'clock for a little under 2 hours. That's the live show. And then in the course, going up roughly until midnight and later, I try to arrange repeats of this show. Generally, I've been running a repeat of the show at 6 o'clock local time, an hour after it ends, an hour and 5 minutes after it ends. I've been able to do that because, in terms of our schedule here at Free Radio, we've had an open slot from 6 to 8. So I've gotten into the habit of just filling that slot with my show. Now we have a young woman. Who is a veteran radio announcer who has a show called Spirit of Bounce, B-O-U-N-C-E, Spirit of Bounce, that's Melody's show, starts at 7. Has something to do with hip-hop music and a take on hip-hop music and tying it in with, I don't know, something spiritual. Sorry, Melody, for not being able to come up with a better definition. Her show starts at 7, goes from 7 to 8 local time, PDT. So I'll still be, for the time being, I'll run the first hour of this show from 6 to 7. And then there will be, in the course of the week, until my next live show next Monday, you'll be hearing us again. You'll be hearing a repeat of this show, this episode of Mideast Madness. And finally, most of my shows, of my recorded shows, not all, but most of them, are archived on a website called Radio for All. That's radio, and then the digit 4, and then ALL.net. RadioForAll.net. I also leave a podcast of the most current show on Santa Cruz, IndieBay.org. That's IndieBay, Santa Cruz, IndieBay.org, under Mideast Madness. They have a calendar. You just click on the calendar and go to the time slot for the usual time slot for this live show, 3 p.m. Mondays, to get that podcast and announcement. An ongoing announcement for the show will be there. So, reruns are available. Just don't forget, if you're listening to a rerun, please don't call in. If there's anyone in the studio, and we're not just doing a download of an internet show, you might confuse the person who is here. So, anytime you're listening to a non-live show, keep in mind you'll be able to talk to me and call into the studio from 3 p.m. to 4:55 every Monday. It is now 4:45. Water is good. Beverage is good. Why not? A very, very quick item here. Mazin Kumsiye has his own Palestinian blog. Calls it the Human Rights Newsletter. Mazin Kumsiye's Human Rights Newsletter. I read this to you last week. It's not too long. We went on Israeli Independence Day, Rabin Square, Tel Aviv, to celebrate the ethnic cleansing along with the people of Israel. We distributed maps prepared by Zohrot, documenting, these maps documented the locations of villages and towns that disappeared almost immediately after 14 May 1948, villages and various communities that were vacated by Palestinians who became refugees and, of course, were not permitted to return. 750,000 Palestinians from 1948 and several hundred thousand more in 1967. The same thing happened. Those communities, now considered by the Israelis to be derelict, vacated ghost towns, relics of a previous time, were bulldozed, by and large, destroyed. The buildings were destroyed, so the Arabs would have nothing to come back to anyway. And that evidence of a previous indigenous people was thereby removed. Somewhere between 400 and 900 some such villages disappeared in this manner. So this is what the Zohrot maps Kumsier is talking about were of. So he says, we went on Israeli Independence Day in Rabin Square, Tel Aviv, to celebrate the ethnic cleansing, quote-unquote, ethnic cleansing along with the people of Israel. He has a quotation here from Theodor Herzl, who is the founder of modern-day political Zionism. Theodor Herzl lived in the 19th century, the late 1800s, and he is the one who gathered various homeland-oriented Jews in Europe. I believe the big meeting was in Switzerland in 1897, as I recall. Or was it 1880-something? At any rate, in the gay 90s of the 19th century, Theodor Herzl said this, quote, "For Europe, we would constitute over there," meaning in Palestine, "part of a bulwark against Asia, as well as the advanced post of civilization against barbarism," end quote. Theodor Herzl, founder of modern-day political Zionism. This was written in Judenstadt, which is German for Jewish state, Judenstadt, 1896. What I'm getting at, folks, is this says something about the imperious colonialistic thinking that this man, Herzl, had in the name of establishing a homeland for the Jews in the part of the world where many of their ancestors came from. I say many of because there are an awful lot of Jews who simply have bloodlines to a lot of other groups of people after more than 2,000 years. They are not out-and-out descendants of the ancient Hebrews, according to my learning. And, of course, there are many, many Jews who are converts. They have no such bloodline in them at all. But I don't want to get into too much of talking about bloodlines and purity or lack of purity of this race or that race. That's not the main point. The point is the ugliness of this imperial, colonial attitude that Herzl is admitting when he says, "For Europe, we would constitute over in Palestine part of a bulwark against Asia." Against Asia, he says, as well as the advanced post of civilization against barbarism. And who are the barbarians he's talking about? Well, according to his own words, presumably anyone who is in Asia. And when he says a bulwark against Asia, it's as though he's erecting a modern-day Great Wall of China to keep the Mongols, as it were, away. And, of course, in the immediate area of historic Palestine, he is talking about Arabs. He is talking about those of the Islamic faith. There's another quotation here. Listen closely to this one. This is someone else speaking. Quote, "Within a few years, the wars of consolidation and expansion began. Ironically enough, the horrors of the Holocaust became the rationalization for the preparation by Zionists of acts of genocide against the indigenous people of Palestine. Those of us who, in the years that were to follow, raised our voices publicly against the violent apartheid of the Israeli state were vilified by the Zionist press," end quote. This was said by a man named Joe Slovo, African National Congress leader who happened to be Jewish. Again, those of us who in the years that were to follow raised our voices publicly against the violent apartheid of the Israeli state and were vilified by the Zionist press. Joe Slovo, ANC leader who is Jewish. Okay. I wanted to give that a good repeat from last week. See, the other big thing about that particular piece that I read from is it included a YouTube video of Palestinian sympathetic Israelis, Israeli Jews, liberals, I suppose, also called left, some would call them leftist Israeli Jews. Others would say there are betrayers, treasonous, because they sympathize with the plight of the Palestinians. The YouTube video is of their celebrating the ethnic cleansing, to put it bluntly, in the course of this Tel Aviv Independence Day celebration this year. And they were carrying a huge banner saying to people that that's exactly what they were doing. I tried to pull up the video so I can get the soundtrack for you last week, but it wasn't working. I don't want to waste any more time with that. Folks, we got two more minutes left of Mideast Madness. If you value this show for any reason, which is to say, I say for any reason, meaning either you're in support of the message and the effort that I'm making, or you want to do something underhanded like record the show and then take snippets of it and edit through your lines of communication how this Palestinian American who thinks he's Palestinian, if that's your leaning in that department, editing parts of the show and using it as an example of modern anti-Semitism. If you do not make a distinction between anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism, I suppose one could do that with this show and its contents. Don't be that way, folks. Instead, just listen to my entire show and then read all the other stuff you want, all the other forms of propaganda from both sides, from third parties, from neutral parties, and then make your decision about what's going on. If you're lucky enough to live out there inside Israel or in the territories and neighboring Arab countries, if you're lucky enough to have visited any of those areas, the proverbial paradises that they are, then you have that experience under your belt as well. One more call for donations. Please support this program for whatever purpose you may have for it, or whatever hopes you may have for Mideast Madness, the show that is. Send your donations to FRSC. That's Free Radio Santa Cruz. Just put FRSC down there. P.O. Box 7811, Santa Cruz, California, zip 95061. Thank you for listening. This is Ren. I'm signing off. Shutting down the recorder. And next up on Free Radio Santa Cruz Service is the short 5-minute piece, Palestine Today. Thank you for listening.